Fab Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Well, if you may have guessed by now, listening to this voice, it is not Brad Sesmat. I am Paula Bovin of AZ Central Sports. I am filling in for my friend Brad, who's doing who knows what. A little lonely in the studio here today, but I have my Italian mother here, and hopefully she won't blurt out Italian profanities as she's sometimes prone to do. So we're confident that won't happen. And of course, my friends Eric Sorensen is here and Jared, and they're going to keep me help me go through this. What a great weekend to fill in for this show because of all the stuff that's coming up. And I'm going to get to that Cardinals game in 1 second with the Bengals. I had a chance to talk to Al Michaels yesterday, and he had some really interesting takes on how the country perceives the Cardinals. But I want to get quickly to ASU because I talked to my son this morning. He's a freshman there. He's one of those insane students that is camping out at Camp Fargo for tickets. And I checked in with someone at ASU, and get this, this year they have 364 campsites around Wells Fargo Arena. And these are students, in case you don't know, that are set up to get tickets for the game. So people like my son were there from last night. 364 campsites. It's the most they've ever had. I think they had 240 for the Notre Dame game.
Whoa. Hold on. Okay.
Yes.
So there are people, students camping out at Camp Fargo?
Yes.
For the five and five ASU?
Yeah, absolutely.
Against 6 and 5 U of A?
Yeah, and
that's good. That makes me feel good. There actually is passion.
There is passion.
Because I thought for sure, Paula, this game, two teams that have drastically underachieved, especially the local team in Tempe. I didn't know what the buzz was going to be, but that's good to hear.
Well, and on the heels of the last game, there were fewer students than I've ever seen there for this season. So I really wondered about this. So yeah, so these campsites are going three times around Wells Fargo just to get good seats for the game tomorrow. So I think ASU is excited. They're going to have a great turnout with that. And we'll talk more about ASU later because we've got a great show coming up. We've got Jude LaCava, Fox 10 sports director, who one of the most tapped in guys in town. Jimmy Vaccaro, who's a longtime Vegas bookmaker, our weekly guest. We're going to talk a lot about the Bengals and Cardinals game. And also Bill Hancock, who I've known for years. A great guy, even though some of the things he's worked for, like the BCS, I didn't like at all. But he's a college football playoff executive director. I just met 2 days ago with a bunch of people putting the big college football championship game on here coming up in, what, I think 52 days. So we can talk about that as well. But had a chance to talk to Al Michaels yesterday. He's going to be here Sunday night for that Bengals and Cardinals game. And Eric, it was so interesting to me to hear him talk about the national perception. And he even said for years, you know, the Cardinals were sort of maybe a cute storyline when they were winning. But now people are embracing the players on that team. You know, the Carson Palmer story, obviously the Larry Fitzgerald story. It's, you know, I have a feeling we're going to start seeing more jersey sales and stuff like that, which has not been a strong point of the Cardinals in the past.
And for me, Paula, the thing that's most exciting is this team and this franchise, they're going to be consistently good.
Right.
With Wiz, he got them to a Super Bowl, made the playoffs, and then slowly fizzled out. I just can't see, as long as Bruce Arians is the head coach and Steve Keim is in charge of making the personnel decisions, this team is going to be good for a long time, and not overstating the obvious, but if they can keep number 3 healthy for a few more years, that will obviously lead to more playoff appearances.
Well, so. And you remember with Wisenhunt, there's always sort of that undercurrent of, well, it's really Kurt Warner is the reason they're winning games. And you kind of see what happened with Wisenhunt. Obviously,
sure.
Tennessee wasn't always his fault, but he's not all his fault, but he's not even employed anymore. And that was another thing that Al Michaels said yesterday was, you know, there's great praise for Keim and great praise, you know, for Bruce Arians and the staff they've put together there. But he said from the beginning, when he heard that Arians was hired, sort of the insiders around the NFL that he talks to were raving about the move. You know, a lot of us thought, oh, this could be a good move, but we didn't really know what we know about him now. But there was this great blanket of respect for him. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think they're built for long term and not just short term.
And the Cardinals and their fans should thank the Chicago Bears, because Arians really, really wanted to be the Bears head coach. And, well, you've seen what's happened since Arians has arrived, and Arizona, and you've seen the direction the Bears have gone since they chose not to hire him.
It's funny how one little decision can impact so many franchises.
Head coaches in the NFL, I mean, to a certain degree, are really important. You have to have good players to have good coaches, but
right.
I mean, Arians has, he's the perfect combination of the players trust him, but the players also fear him. And that's a great combination, because that team's going to play hard for him every single week.
That would be if, you know, send someone to quote-unquote coaching school if there was one. I mean, he is the perfect example. Sometimes I hear him talk about players after games. I'm like, man, this guy's not going to play for him. This guy's not going to like him. But he has a way of just, you're right, getting that respect, and it's done so much for that organization.
Well, and a perfect example is Calais Campbell. The Cardinals are entering their bye week, and we're at his Monday press conference, and out of the blue, Arians just says, we need more out of Calais Campbell. He's not playing. He's not playing up to his level, up to his capabilities. And Calais had to wait not only through that whole week, but then the bye week came in, and had to wait all the way until Sunday night, last Sunday night. And you know, that's just Arian's way of, everyone motivates a little bit differently. He uses the press at times to motivate his players, and you know, so far so good. So,
and the funny part of that story was how well Calais was actually playing. I mean, obviously he was trying to push him to a farther place, but I thought that was funny, and Calais responded as he often does. All right, obviously that's not the only game this weekend. Saturday, Arizona State meet at Sun Devil Stadium, a day game, which makes me very happy when it comes to deadlines. You know, I keep thinking this is going to be Rich Rodriguez's last Territorial Cup, and there have been no confirmations about interviews. That stuff usually comes out obviously after the season. It just feels like he's not going to be around next season, and I think when fans are watching this game tomorrow, this may be the last of Rich Rod at Sun Devil Stadium.
I think it is. Do you? I think this is the last that we'll see of Rich Rod. You know, you and I have been around long enough, Paula, to know when a coach is probably going to leave.
Right.
My prime example is not once during the season has Rich Rod said anything about staying at U of A.
Right.
He's been very quiet when being addressed on the topic. And if you listen to Greg Byrne, sort of
sure,
just the way he answers questions in regards to Rich Rod's future, it's almost like he's expecting him to leave. It's no guarantee he's going to leave.
Right.
But I tend to guess this will be his last couple games down in Tucson.
You know, and I know people hate to see that stuff. The reality is he's been there 4 years. I think he's done good things for that program.
Very good things.
Very good things. I think just having his name there, the respect he has with his, you know, his innovation with offense. He's got we both like Greg Byrne a lot, a great athletic director to work for, but it's still a basketball school. And at some point when you're a football coach, I think that matters. There's certain things you feel you are limited that you can do, even though they're investing a lot of money in the football program. And I think the ties of, you know, being at home matter as you get older, and you know, you still have family back there. You're more comfortable. You grew up in a very different environment than what is in Arizona. I wouldn't be surprised at all if this is the last time we see him in this game.
And we should thank Todd Graham and Rich Rodriguez, because they've really, not that the rivalry ever needed it, but they've really enhanced the Territorial Cup. I mean, last year, huge game, basically winner take all in the Pac-12 South. The year before that, ASU was playing for a Pac-12 South title, and there's something. I mean, Rich Rod is double digit wins, got him to a Fiesta Bowl in his first 2 years. I think eight wins in each of his first two seasons. This year, a little bit down, but the team, they haven't gotten any favors from the Pac-12. I mean, no bye weeks. And they're playing all these late night games. It's just, it's hard. Eventually a team's going to wear down, and now you're finally seeing the injuries of a long season.
Somebody asked me yesterday who's done the better job of the two coaches. They were hired similar year, similar time. I was looking up, I mean, they've done almost identical in performance. If you're looking at on paper, their records are almost identical. In fact, depending how things shake out this season, they could actually finish their 4 years with the exact same record. They've both gone to 3 bowl games, possibly 4, depending on what happens. And they both have a Pac-12 South title. So their progress has been very similar. I think the difference is Graham has won more Pac-12 games. And I think Graham has done a little bit better job in recruiting than Rich Rod has. I think Rodriguez has gotten some good recruits there. But I think the momentum right now is in ASU's favor, which is possibly another reason we could see Rich Rodriguez leave. I mean, there's just a lot of things building up. Last thing we've got, not last thing, but one of the other things I don't want to overshadow that's happening this weekend, the Suns are playing the Nuggets tonight. Suns are 6-5, which is, I think if you told someone before the season, they'd be okay with that. Obviously, they're not going to win their division when you look at Golden State, which is 13 and zip right now. They've been playing incredible. But I have to say I've been impressed with the combo of Bledsoe and Brandon Knight in the backcourt. I mean, early on, there's been a lot of ups and downs, but I see something happening with their kind of chemistry and the fact that they're so young. I think that bodes really well for the Suns coming up here. I don't know how well they're going to do this season, but I think at least it seems like there's some vision and some promise with that organization. And considering what has gone on with the Suns over the past couple of years, I think that's progress. A great show coming up. As I mentioned, Jude LaCava will be up next, Fox 10 sports director. We'll talk mostly football, but with Jude, you can kind of hit him up about anything. Jimmy Vaccaro, the longtime Las Vegas bookmaker. We're going to talk about the Bengals and Cardinals game, and there's a lot of really interesting stats that we can address with him, and I'm curious to hear his take on that. And then Bill Hancock, someone I've known a long time, college football playoff executive director, is going to share his thoughts on the rankings to this point, and well, I'm going to share my thoughts as well. So this is the Brad Sesmatch Show. I'm Paula Bovin. I want to remind people we are streaming live on sports360az.com, azcentralsports.com, and we'll be back to talk a little more football here in a minute.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
This is the Brad Sesmet Show. I am not, of course, Brad Sesmet. My name is Paula Bovin. I am a sports columnist with AZ Central Sports, and I am filling in for Brad today. And I am fired up to do it today because even though they have me solo in here, it is a football weekend. And just as a sports writer, the storylines of both of these games coming up, Cardinals-Bengals on Sunday night, ASU-Arizona on Saturday, doesn't even matter the outcome. You just know there's going to be great storylines coming out of those games. So I'm looking forward to it. You know, when I got into this business early on, I'd go out at events and you'd see TV sportscasters out there sometimes, but a lot of the guys that were in the studio, you wouldn't see at practices, you wouldn't see at games. That's changed a little bit now because I think staffs are getting smaller. But the one guy you would always see out at a sporting event, at a practice, working his sources, is a guy we're about to have on the phone right now. That's Jude LaCava, Fox 10 sports director. How you doing, Jude?
Well, I'm doing great. You know, that's because I didn't have a place to go. You know, I was on park benches, hanging around different places. But it's been fun. And I agree with you. This is a special weekend that really creates so many interesting storylines. And I have to tell you, I particularly like your story on Mike Norvell and his relationship with Todd Graham and the connection of two single moms.
Right.
I think that Graham's a very interesting guy, complex in a sense that relationship is very different to him. And there's a side to him, a very emotional, personal side, that I think has allowed him to connect with Mike Norvell on a number of different levels.
Yeah, you know, I was not a person who grew up without a father, but I can imagine it changes who you are and shapes your personality, and you're right. I think that's impacted both of those guys, and in a lot of ways, I think has helped both of them as coaches. And we're going to get to ASU in a minute. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Cardinals and Bengals game on Sunday night. There is a million storylines, Jude, coming out of this game. What are the ones that are jumping out at you?
Well, despite Carson's attempt to keep the relationship that he had with the Bengals low-key, he did admit that this isn't just another game. And, you know, I've talked to Steeler players about Carson when he played for Cincinnati, and I'm not trying to defend Carson, because on the outside looking in, you might see a California kid that might be a little soft saying, I can never win in Cincinnati. But the fact of the matter is he had a porous offensive line. I think he was sacked close to 30 times the previous two seasons before he decided to kind of force a trade. The defense wasn't very good, and yet he had a pretty good passing game. He put up pretty good numbers. So he basically was getting pummeled by some of those really rough physical divisional teams like Baltimore and Pittsburgh. So he simply said, look, if you're not going to be committed to winning, Mike Brown, I'm out of here. And I kind of get that.
Right.
You know, It's almost like the old Cardinals, Paula, when we knew going to training camp they were going to be 4-12.
Sure.
I mean, based on their personnel. So I'm not defending, you know, his ability to cry uncle and say, get me out of here. But I understand it. He just didn't believe he could win there. And next to the old Bidwell family, Mike Brown was right next to them in terms of an inefficient organization.
You know, I went back the other day and looked back at when they brought Carson aboard here. And there were some people applauding the move, but there were a lot of people saying, why do you think this guy can change things when you look at his past, whether it was with Oakland or the Bengals? What do you when you look back at Carson Palmer early on, what do you remember his reputation sort of being?
Well, I always was confused that Ken Wisenhut didn't try to save his job by getting Carson Palmer. And it goes back to, you might be able to coach quarterbacks, but can you evaluate them? And I thought Carson was an answer. And I say that because I talked to players. And players would tell me, big arm, accurate, and he's a tough guy. But on the outside, looking in, you'd say, well, but he wanted out of Cincinnati. I really thought that it was brilliant. They bettered themselves over Drew Stanton when they got Carson Palmer. And again, organizations win. It's the players you have around you as a quarterback. I call it the Archie Manning theory. If Archie Manning goes to the Pittsburgh Steelers, he's in the Hall of Fame. And Terry Bradshaw goes to the Saints, he's not.
Right.
I mean, who do you play with? Who's around you? And what is the standard of your organization? And Carson, to me, finally, late in his career, gets a ride with Steve Keim and Bruce Arians, where they've got players on both sides of the ball and an aggressive play caller in Bruce Arians. So I think you have to really be careful. You know, the success of a quarterback isn't just based on his own talent. It's based on the organizational success of the personnel you have around him. And you can see that with so many different quarterbacks, whether it's Brady in the New England system or whether it's Brees now suffering through the Saints' depletion of talent. All he needed was the right players around him. And what I've seen from him, the sample size of his toughness, of his dedication, of his work ethic has been through the roof. He is a MVP-type candidate right now.
I was talking to an agent who was not his agent, but who knows him well and has known him for years, and said they've never seen him so happy because he likes living here. He really respects his coach and, like you said, the people that have surrounded him. We're talking with Jude LaCava, Fox 10 sports director. You know, some people, Jude, have talked about this game as a possible Super Bowl preview. You know, the Bengals were undefeated until that pretty horrific loss against Houston last week. Cardinals obviously playing well. Do you dare say Super Bowl and Cardinals in the same sentence, or is it too early?
I don't think it's too early, because I think if you look at, I've never seen two teams that I would consider Super Bowl contenders 3 weeks ago almost collapse. Green Bay and Denver, one based on the age of their quarterback, Peyton Manning, the other based on the inability to have big-time receivers, and they've kind of been figured out in Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. All of a sudden now you have to move the Cardinals in that, kind of that top two in the NFC conversation, Carolina and Arizona. And you got to put New England in there. They haven't lost. So if you look at the top two or three teams, it's New England, it's Carolina, and it's Arizona. Now, we know how quickly it can change, and I'm a big believer, a la Kurt Warner, the last few weeks of the regular season on how they played, went 9-7 and then made a run to a Super Bowl. It's how you're playing the last few weeks going into the playoffs that truly matters. But if you really assess where teams are playing right now, the Cardinals are in the top three in the entire league, in my book.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think going in, for people who care about these things, I think they're a 5-point favorite now going into this game. So we'll see if that plays out. Obviously, the other game this weekend, a lot of people are talking about, Arizona visits Sun Devil Stadium against Arizona State. I've been asked by a ton of people this week who I think will win this game. I have no flipping idea, Jude. I mean, it's really kind of a flip the coin kind of game. Are you getting a feeling one way or the other?
I kind of like ASU's chances just because of quarterback stability. I don't, you know, the Solomon situation, I don't think he should play. You know, I talk to a ton of neurologists that tell me if somebody is rendered unconscious or close to it, they need at least 2 to 3 weeks off. And the protocols are very low today on the NFL, and I think collegiate level, as much as we hear more about heightened awareness of concussion. So, and if you go with Gerard Randall, he's a really talented runner, but a limited passer. I think the thing that I look at with ASU, Paul, is really interesting, is that this stat really stuns me. Do you know that Taylor Kelly in 2013, when this program played for a Pac-12 championship, rushed for over 600 yards?
Wow.
And up until the last game with Mike Pergovici, Mike rushed for 80. And my biggest beef with this season was the lack of adjustment by Coach Graham and Coach Norvell to the read option, and did it fit Mike Pergovici? Because I don't think it did. I think we saw some signs, the UCLA game, the Oregon game. But for the most part, we have not seen that same explosive, to coin a phrase, high-octane offense that we saw in the previous seasons. The offense didn't match the quarterback, and I think it has a lot to do with how this program disappointed this year.
You know, I remember reading, I think Doug Haller wrote a preview of the season, and Rick Neuheisel was quoted in it, as a college football analyst, kind of second-guessing the ability of Berkovici to play in that offense. And I thought, oh, I'm sure they'll figure it out. But, I mean, it's a legitimate issue, Jude, and it's hard. I understand how much coaches hate second-guessing, especially from media. Oh, you've never played college football before. But there seems to be some disconnect with that offense and what seems to be a lot of talent on Berkovici's end, whether it's, more his strong arm than his mobility or whatever. They just don't seem like they could have gotten the production out of him that I think all of us thought at the beginning of the season.
Paul, he's going to be in an NFL training camp somewhere. He's got an NFL arm. He's got an arm on the level of an Andrew Walter, maybe a little undersized.
Right.
But he's a talented young man. I just think that we all kind of sensed this coming, and then it played out that way. I'm not against read option principles, but I like balance in the offenses today. Could they have incorporated some NFL schemes, combination routes, maybe work out of the pistol a little bit more, have them take some 3, 5, 7-step drops? And I wonder, here's my interesting question, and it has a little bit of contempt here in it, and that is, when you coach high-tempo, high-octane, and simplistic up-tempo read-option offenses, can you dial it back and also incorporate some pro-set variables in your offense to cater to your quarterback? And I didn't see that enough this year.
That's a great point. That's Jude LaCava, Fox 10 Sports Director. Switching away from football for just a minute here, Jude. Suns are playing the Nuggets tonight. They're 6-5 this season so far. To quote the great Denny Green, are they who you thought they would be? Twisting that a bit, or are they better or worse than you thought, or about the same?
They're a little bit better, but this is an interesting take. I think they're going to climb the ladder a little bit more in the West, but not for the reason you think. I think New Orleans is going to be more of a project than Alvin Gentry would like. Mm-hmm. I don't think Sacramento already has some issues. Utah, so what I mean by that is that they're playing with more effort. They're still turning the ball over in that backcourt. They played hard against Chicago the other night. They just couldn't close. I think they are better with Tyson Chandler. So I think what we're really talking about, though, is battling for a 7 or 8 seed in the West, because some of those teams that are on the back end of the 6, 7, 8 seed are not quite as good as we thought they were, to coin Denny's phrase. But they are going to be on the cusp of toying with that playoff spot. Is that enough to reinvigorate the Suns' faithful? Good question. I don't know. I think that Bledsoe's trying to be that guy. Brandon Knight, that they're both kind of scoring-type point guards. Markieff, I still don't know if he wants to play here. He's certainly not playing like it. His shooting percentage has been somewhere around 35%. So still a work in progress. I do believe that the story behind this season is that nobody wants to say it, that Jeff Hornacek has to make the playoffs to keep his job and get an extension. And that's a lot of pressure on that staff. But they're playing harder. They're maturing a little bit more. I don't see a big jump, though, in terms of a team that fans believe can really make a dent in the postseason.
Great stuff. And that's very interesting what you said about Hornacek, because I thought they should have given him one earlier so this wouldn't be hanging over his head, but that's not the direction they're going. All right.
It's true, Paula, and if you look at it, I mean, the one thing I'll say about Robert Sarver is he's always late when it comes to contract decisions, whether it be with his players or even his coaching staff. And to me, I think you have to look at it. Do you give your coaching staff, if you think they're doing the right thing, a vote of confidence and an endorsement? And I want to see how that plays out this year.
All right. Well, if someone ever asks me if you deserve an extension, Jude, I'm going to say that they should give you one. Thanks for joining us today.
I'm over at AFC right now, by the way. So hanging around looking for stories. But thank you, Paul.
All right. Good talking to you, Jude.
Enjoyed your column with Mike Norvell and Todd Graham. It should be a fun weekend.
It should indeed. That's Jude LaCava, Fox 10 sports director. Coming up, Jimmy Vaccaro. You know his name from talking about odds. He's a longtime Las Vegas bookmaker. He'll be up next here on the Brad Sesmat Show, Sports 360 AZ. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, filling in for Brad here on Sports 360 AZ. And I want to remind people, I know a lot of you know this obviously already, but we are streaming live on sports360az.com and azcentralsports.com. Well, if you've ever heard me talk on this show, I love numbers. I love odds. I probably look at the latest lines every day in the paper just because I'm curious what other people are thinking. And this guy coming up knows a lot about those things. Jimmy Vaccaro, longtime Las Vegas bookmaker, South Point Casino Resort odds maker, who's checking in for his weekly segment. Jimmy, how are you?
Paul, we're fine. Thank you for the kind words. And what a weekend it was. And we got a big one coming up this weekend.
No kidding. And, you know, there's we obviously got the UA-ASU game people are excited about, but the craziness about the Cardinals and Bengals and where the Cardinals are heading. And, you know, one trend I saw, I think had them like 12-0 at home against non-division division opponents, 9-2-1 against the spread. They're favored, what, I think by 5 this weekend. Do you think those kind of trends will continue? Or?
Yeah, we're actually, when I say we, that's everybody's. Turning the page on the old Cardinals and think it's time now, especially with the drive that you had last week in the fourth quarter. Palmer really showed that he is maybe the guy that was lacking a few fourth quarter comebacks. But and everybody's rallying around him. You can see that Fitzgerald is so glad that things are going right, and I think he figures he really has a chance now maybe to win this thing. So I think it's, flowing over to the rest of the team. And, yes, you are legitimate. And as you said, Paul, Arizona's a five-point favorite over the Cincinnati Bengals this weekend. But it opened 3.5, so there's been a steady flow of money on the Arizona Cardinals. So we're going to see what happens. But the people that I deal with, the people that I trust, and with my own judgment also, we have Arizona no worse than the fifth best team in the NFL right now. That's a pretty good compliment, and there's no doubt that you guys are going to be in the playoffs. There's no doubt that you took care of business last week, which was an unbelievable turnaround, and you're in good shape, and you're with a good football team, and I think they're going to go deep in the playoffs.
The other game coming up this weekend here, obviously Arizona State, Arizona at Sun Devil Stadium on Saturday. Many have considered ASU's season, I think most would, pretty underachieving. What kind of numbers are you seeing sort of with this game? How are people betting?
Well, first of all, Paul, I think both teams underachieved this year. This is naturally the biggest game of the year, the Territorial Bowl, so this is the only big thing they have to play with. You won't see either one of these teams playing on New Year's Day, but naturally with the injury to Solomon, it threw a little monkey wrench in it. What I put up with, and I don't think Solomon's going to play it, Arizona State is a 6-point favorite. Seems to be a fair number. And I think this game is going to come down to the wire at the end only because of the emotion involved, only because this is right now the biggest game of the season. Yes, one team's 5-5, one team's 6-5. The last game of the season for one of the teams. So I would look for an effort on both teams, but definitely Arizona State should be a favorite. And since we put it up, there's actually been really no push on either side. I would suspect come tomorrow that, we'll see a little bit of Arizona money anytime you see Arizona as an underdog, especially these rivalry-type games when you're playing for basically the whole season. It's a little tighter than maybe it would be a second or third week of the season. So six seems to be a fair number because nobody knows what to do with it. The number really hasn't moved in the last 24 hours.
Great stuff, Jimmy. We got 6 points ASU favored, 5 points Cardinals over Bengals. Really looking forward to all those games this weekend in town. Jimmy, thanks for joining us.
All right. Talk to you later.
That was Jimmy Vaccaro, longtime Las Vegas bookmaker. And 6 points for ASU. That's interesting. I hadn't looked at the line. I didn't know if the spread was going to be quite that big. I'll be interested to see if that trend continues.
Does the spread even matter, though, when it's ASU and
U
of A?
No, probably not.
Can you really predict these games? I mean, you can go and run the numbers, but weird things always happen.
Always.
Just when you think you have it figured out and one team is significantly better than the other or a starting quarterback's out, U of A could flip the script tomorrow and come in and really roll ASU. That wouldn't surprise me. And if ASU rolled U of A, that wouldn't surprise me. So.
Well, and I think what it tells you is probably who should win. But as you said, after you know all the things that you see on paper, it really doesn't matter. And a lot of great storylines with this game.
I will guarantee you two things, though.
Oh, let's hear it.
Lots of pregame trash talking on the field between players.
That's a given.
And likely at least two or three fights in the parking lot between fans.
Those
are both givens, correct.
Real quick, they have not gotten to A Mountain this year, I don't think,
no,
have they?
No, ASU has been guarding the A, protecting it. They've had students camping out, making sure that the A stays the color it should.
Very nice. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, 364 campsites around Wells Fargo Arena last night. Students camping out for the best seats for that game. That's the biggest by far, 240 campsites for Notre Dame. So it's going to be a very passionate atmosphere, even if this game doesn't mean quite as much as we thought it would. There are some games that mean quite a lot. A lot of them have to do with college football playoff rankings. We're going to talk to Bill Hancock here coming up of the College Football Playoff, their executive director, and pick his brain a little bit about what's going on here on the Brad Sesmatt Show, Sports 360 AZ. Welcome back. This is the Brad Sesmatt Show. I am, of course, not Brad Sesmatt. My name is Paula Bovin, and hang on, my computer is talking to me. You know how that is when you go to AZ Central, which is a fantastic website, but the video pops up and it starts screaming at you. That's what was just happening. We're going to be joined in a few minutes by Bill Hancock, College Football Playoff Executive Director, kind of get his thoughts on some of the things that have been going on. And there is always controversy with the rankings. I thought they got most of it right for the most part, not that they're waiting for my decision. I thought Alabama at number two is the team you got to like right now. I like the way they're playing. Thought Stanford was a little bit overrated at number 11, but in the scheme of things, I don't think that matters. I'm seeing what's happening with the Pac-12 and the likelihood of them sort of kind of being in the mix at the end is, well, very unlikely. They're just beating each other up. So anyway, those are my thoughts. I am now going to introduce, you know, and it's very funny because I've known Bill Hancock for a long time. He is one of the, and I mean this sincerely, one of the greatest people in the business. It's always an honor and a pleasure to work for him. But it's never stopped me from poking fun and sometimes taking shots at some of the things that the people under him are doing. But we'll get into that. Bill, how are you?
I'm great, Paula. Thank you very much. And you're right. Our friendship has not stopped either one of us from behaving professionally. And I like that a lot.
Absolutely. Let me get from you, Bill, first of all, your general sense on how the public is reacting to this system. I had a chance to meet with some members of your committee here a couple days ago, and I sense that, at least from a public standpoint, they're now understanding the system, and for the most part, they're embracing it, if not at least debating it sometimes. But
the public is embracing this, Paula, and one thing is, it's such a change from the way college football has always operated, that rankings, that the poll mentality is way different from the way that our committee operates. We start with a clean sheet of paper every week, and I just think it's going to take fans a little while to become accustomed to it, but we're seeing more and more each time that the fans are understanding how the committee operates.
Do you feel like, there's still going to be, I would imagine, when it comes to the end, some subjectivity to it? And I know you can't take that away from it completely, but at some point, maybe there's going to be two, one-loss teams in it. Is there still going to be a little of that where it's subjectivity is an issue, or do you feel like there's enough sort of numbers and things like that where it feels like it's an objective statement? I don't know if that makes sense what I'm asking, but do you know where I'm coming from, Bill, with that?
Yeah, I do, and really that's the reason why we have a human committee. We want human judgment to be a factor in this. We had that data-driven BCS, as you know so well, and the BCS did great things for college football, but it was time to move on. And one of the key things about moving on was getting a human committee that could take a deep dive into every team and then rank the teams. And that's what we have.
Well, I'm looking right now at the person producing this show. He attended TCU. He's very passionate about that program. I have sort of heard, I think some people feel like the committee has maybe underrated TCU. How would you respond to that?
TCU's had a great season, as everybody knows. Gary's done a great job with their program. Each week, though, you have to not look at where the one team is, but what happened around it. Who moved up and down around it. We don't ever just take one team alone. We always evaluate teams in comparison with others. And TCU dropped, what, 3 spots this week after really not a great performance against a Kansas team that has struggled all season, and other teams around them just played well. Navy had a nice victory. I think North Carolina might have moved up ahead of TCU. So nobody is considered in a vacuum, and that's the way we look at TCU this week.
Speaking with Bill Hancock, College Football Playoff Executive Director, you know, from this standpoint, it's been fascinating to watch the Pac-12 unfold, Bill, because there's a lot of talented teams. Some people are saying this is the most talented conference in the country, but they also have been beating up on each other a bit. I know there's been some arguments about maybe everyone should play the same amount of conference games, things like that. I guess, how do you respond to the concerns about a conference like the Pac-12 and the fact that because they're so good and they're beating up on each other, maybe they'll suffer at the end?
Well, first of all, we don't think about conferences. Our duty is to think about teams individually and compare their bodies of work with other teams. One thing that comes into play in this, I think, is those teams that happen to be in the Pac-12 have pretty good strength of schedule because they get to play the other good teams in the conference. On the other hand, as you said, they beat each other sometimes, which is all part of the game. But I think this will all settle out in the end, and I just think that it's been a great couple of seasons for the Pac-12, and I don't see them going anywhere for sure in the future.
You know, I respect a lot how sort of the committee has treated Alabama, because I think they're playing as well as anybody right now. And when the committee is talking about where they put teams and ranking them, how much do you think is put into how a team is playing now versus maybe, you know, a team that might have one loss early? Is how they're playing now versus how they were playing earlier a part of the equation?
It is truly the full body of work. And obviously, we know that teams change during the season. Teams get better, some teams slide a little bit for whatever reason, and the committee has to keep that in mind. But it's not possible to say that winning at the end or losing at the end is worse than losing early. A lot of people try to play with that and figure it out, but the fact is the committee's charged us to look at the whole season.
We're speaking with Bill Hancock, College Football Playoff Executive Director, and I guess, and this may be the same answer to what you just said, but how about as far as injuries? Because we've seen that was such an issue here in the past week with key injuries to major players. When the team is sort of assessing when the committee is sort of assessing how a team might do in the future, how would they take into account, say, if a quarterback was just in starting quarterback injured and out for the season? Do they consider that? Or
the good thing about this is that we don't consider the future. We just consider what has happened today. So when the committee looks at injuries, they're not thinking about next week. They're thinking about how that team might have been affected by injuries going into now. And we know some Pac-12 teams have had injuries, kids out with injuries, but those are now back, and the committee knows we'll know to look at the team and maybe look at a loss early when a team had an injury and a key player missing differently than you might have looked at a loss early when the team was at full strength. So injuries are absolutely important, an important part of this, but not from a looking forward perspective.
I mentioned earlier when I was on the radio that, or when I was talking to some people, that I had a chance to meet with the College Football Playoff Committee that for the championship game that were just here in town. I know you were too, Bill. It sounds like the atmosphere here, and that's only, 54 days away, is going to be similar to what it was like here for the Super Bowl, a very vibrant downtown, lots of things to do. When you were out here, what were your impressions of how this is all coming together for the championship game here in town?
Oh, it's coming together really well, Paula. We awarded the game to the Valley because of the facility. Of course, it's a wonderful stadium. and also from the other infrastructure in the valley, but also because of the people. And Brad Wright and his people have just done a great job of putting this together. I think it will be very similar to Super Bowl. But we will not be Super Bowl. We won't try to be. There's only one Super Bowl. We'll have a different feel about our event, I think. But the downtown will be vibrant. We decided to focus everything downtown because that was the only place that had all the infrastructure that we needed for all the activities. It's also important to us to have folks who don't have game tickets be able to touch the event, be able to go to the fan festival, be able to attend the concert with those national headliners, and to be able to touch the event and create memories just as much as if they were in the stadium. And we will pull that off in Phoenix.
You know, people have asked me this, and I pose this a little bit to the committee. Maybe you can able to get into it a little bit more. The whole ticket policy, I know that the kind of the goal of the committee is to make sure that it's a collegiate atmosphere in the stadium. So my understanding is about 20,000 tickets go, and I think that's each school, right, get those amount of tickets. And the rest are sort of involved in the fundraising cause and things like that. There's not a ton that are available for sale to the public. Is that correct?
There are ways for the public to get tickets. There were ways. We had a random selection process for the public, and something just south of 10,000 tickets were in that. And we're delighted with that. We're so great to hear from people who were selected in that random process. We're so thrilled to be able to go to the game. There's also a ticket exchange that's managed online that if folks decide they don't want to go, they can sell their tickets through the ticket exchange. We still have some packages available for premium packages. So there are lots of ways for people to get tickets. But you hit the nail on the head. Collegiate atmosphere, and one way to achieve that is have fans of the teams in the stadium. So, yes, each team will have around 20,000 tickets, probably a little bit more than that. So well over half of the people in the stadium that night will be passionate about the two teams.
We'll be interested to see who those two teams are that come here in the Valley. Bill Hancock, it was great talking to you. Thanks for taking a couple minutes.
Thanks, Paula. Take care.
Bill Hancock, College Football Playoff Executive Director. Can't believe that game is coming up, folks, in, 54 days. I just did the math now and I forgot, but I don't think people realize what they're going to do with the atmosphere here. Eric, it was very much, we saw how downtown and the Super Bowl was.
It's
they're
kind of
doing
great.
Something similar here.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's a great time to be in the Valley. You got the Final Four coming up next after the College Football Playoff Championship. So
it's fun living
the
in
big
this
events,
town.
The big events just keep coming to Arizona.
Yep.
Easy to see why.
They do. And they keep getting it because they do a great job. Jared and Eric, thank you for helping me through this. I'm Paula Bovin. I was filling in for Brad Sesmet here on the Brad Sesmet Show. Great sports weekend coming up. Don't forget tomorrow, Arizona State at Sun Devil Stadium. Get out early if you're driving there. Have a good day.